For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, it's Ethan Skolnick for Five on the Floor on the Five Reasons Sports Network. We try to give you some different voices from that network on this feed. That includes Major Passins and Matt Hanifin. You can catch them on our playback channel, playback.tv/5RSN, watching the Heat games. But they also cover the Sky Force for us, and they monitor developmental prospects. This is something you won't get anywhere else. This is a podcast called The Force. There are several episodes on our YouTube channel now. This is the first one that we've put here on the Five on the Floor feed. If you like it, let us know. We'll get it here more often. And now, the latest episode for Matt and Major of The Force.
Down to Biscay. Yay. Five on the floor. Ride for my dogs. Where here's the thing. You can check the score. Hustle hard, couple scars. Wearing bubble frogs. Just like Buckley said, you in trouble, y'all. Kept the floor playing. Got a all band. Y'all seen the block. Stop with one hand. And Pat, we trust, it's power, have the guts. We're here to bring the heat. Y'all can hang it up.
Welcome to Five on the Floor, a daily insider show on the Miami Heat and the NBA, featuring Ethan Skolnick, Greg Sylvander, and Alex Toledo, plus others from the Five Reasons Sports Network.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of The Force with Matt and Major. And today, it is just us two. We don't have an interview today, but we still have an exciting episode. We're going to be talking about potential second-round draft picks that the Heat could be looking into. And the reason why we're doing second round is because a lot of those guys spend a lot of time at the G League. So then they would obviously then play with the Sky Force, and that is our bread and butter here. So these are guys that, you know, disclaimer, the Heat might not be looking at. Our board is not the same as the Heat board. But it's some guys that stood out specifically to Matt that he thinks would be worth a shot in the second round. I believe the Heat are picking around 43. Is that correct?
Yes, 43.
43. So we also tried to keep that in mind a little bit that, you know, these players might be available around there. In the second round, it's really hard to predict in the NBA draft. Some guys go really high and some guys just randomly fall because it's just all about a shot in the dark right then and there. So, Matt, without further ado, who's the first guy on your list? In no particular order, but who's the first one we're going to talk about?
Oh, another disclaimer. When I do these evals, these are just from what I see. I'm not even close to being a professional scout. That he could listen to this or whatever and completely laugh at all these evals. Again, these are just from my eyes, from what I've seen from these guys. Some of these guys I haven't watched a whole lot of. Some of them I've watched more of. And obviously, as we'll go through, we'll talk about these guys. And we're also doing this exercise because we assume the Heat are keeping the 43rd pick. They could trade that. I think they could trade back like Boston did last year. Boston traded like, I think, three or four times and just racked up second round picks. The Heat could do that. I don't know if they'll do that. Or they could just trade up like they did for KZ Akpala and trade 3 second round picks for him.
That might be a soft subject there to mention to a lot of the fans.
Listen, I'm just saying that we don't really know what their plan is. I don't know what their plan is. And also, like, I have as much sources as a tomato. You're more plugged in than I am when it comes to the sourcing. Obviously, Greg, Ethan, all of our guys at Five Reasons Sports Network, they're a lot more plugged into, like, who the Heat are working out and all that stuff. We don't know, at least I don't know if these guys are working out with Miami. This is just, again, just like we're just projecting a shot in the dark, guys that they could look at just based on what they've done in previous years. I don't have any sources. Again, I have as much sources as you, the listener, if you're just a fan out there. And so keep that in mind. These players are also human beings. It's like, whether it's like a knock or like, none of this is personal. We don't know any of these guys. I don't know any of these guys. And again, for the sake of conversation, for this exercise, we're evaluating players. And so there may be some things that personally we don't like about these players, as like their skill sets. Not, again, it's nothing like personal. We're just evaluating them as basketball players, what we see from them on the court, and in regards to their experience, whether it's college, whether it's international. Nobody's perfect. I'm not perfect. Major's more, a lot more perfect than I am. And then obviously, like, the players on the Skyforce are obviously perfect. We hold them, they're the most perfect players on this planet.
Never say anything negative about anyone.
Yeah. But we're evaluating these guys, so we have to keep this in con- and obviously when we evaluate these guys, there's so much more context to dive into. We're not going to dive into them heavy, because I mean, for the sake of time, we just don't have time for that within the realm of this particular podcast. And so again, just a few disclaimers out there. I'll probably have more as we go throughout. Again, just take these evals or whatever you want with a grain of salt. Everyone has their own opinions. All right. This is why we're talking about this. This is why we're going through this exercise. You have different opinions on certain guys than I do. I have different opinions on certain guys than the Heat scouting department, who have done a tremendous, tremendous job. Those guys are 1,000 times smarter than I will ever be. So again, we're doing this because it's fun. We're doing this just to, again, throw in some darts, and hopefully we can look back on this in 10 to 15 years or whatnot, and say we were right or we were wrong. Like, listen, I've been wrong before on Heat players and players that they've selected. I'll be wrong again. It's perfectly okay. The more you do this, the more wrong you'll get, but also the more right you'll get. So, I have about 8 to 10 guys on here that we're just going to touch on. Again, these guys could fall to the second round. The draft is weird because guys will fall. Guys will get, I mean, again, relative to what we perceive them to be, some guys may be reaches. Some guys just may fall for various reasons. And like teams do work on these guys. Like they work them out, they interview them, they get to know them personally, they get to know them, their families, their relationships, stuff like that. Like, and so these guys, obviously teams do a lot more work than you and I are doing on these guys, just from like a personal standpoint and a relationship standpoint, because they have these guys in the building. And so players fall, these guys could fall, these guys may not fall, who the hell knows. But where do you kind of, I mean, you asked me, I know I just went on like a 3 or 4 minute just tangent, but I guess the first guy that I want to go into is a guy that you've watched more than me, because you're a fan of this team, Harrison Ingram. What's your perception? What's your like scouting of Harrison Ingram? And like, I'll kind of give you mine.
I mean, I fell in love with Harrison Ingram as the year went on. The dude just has a really high motor. Shot really well from three this year. Kind of came out of nowhere, if I remember correctly, from his Stanford days, but shot really well, especially on the open ones. He's real reliable on those. But he's not a huge body. We have here 6'5 with a 7-foot wingspan, really long arms, but that's 6'5. And don't want to have Heat fans hate me. But
Without shoes, by the way, the measurements that I have on here are like combine. I've seen him at 6'8", like people who cite him at 6'8". I don't know if there's that big of a discrepancy. Maybe there was just a false measurement. I don't know. But
yeah, Heat fans are going to hate me for this. But I'm going to say I project him as a small ball four, like a three. You know, in like a normal lineup, he'd be a three. But a small ball four, like the guy's super physical. He loves playing defense. He loves rebounding. And if anyone's ever listened to the show before, we love rebounding. Like, this man was getting double-digit rebounds consistently, and that's playing alongside Bacot, who's the best rebounder in UNC history. So it's not like he's the only one rebounding. He was attacking the boards. One thing I loved in his game that he kind of developed is he'd take people on the block, and he'll do a little push shot times as well. He started understanding open space on the floor. So I just loved how he grew into his role and became absolutely vital to North Carolina, who by the end of the year, really only UConn was playing better than North Carolina. They just ran into a hot Alabama team, really. So I love Harrison Ingram. He is my absolute dream second round pick. I don't know if he's going to be available in the second round, to be honest. You look at mock drafts and sometimes he's late first, sometimes he's second. It seems like people are really struggling to figure out where he's going to go. And I think that's because he has really valuable skill sets on some things, but he does kind of have flaws as a player too. Like you said, all of these second round picks do. So what's your interpretation? Do you think I'm just Homer UNC biased right here?
No. I mean, he averaged, again, to the rebounding point, 8.8 a game next to Big Cot. By my count, I think he had 11 or 12 double doubles. One game that he didn't have a double double, he pulled in 19 rebounds against NC State. He had two additional 17 rebounding games against Virginia Tech and Florida State, one 15 rebounding game against Pitt. Like, that's something that stood off the screen to me whenever I would watch him. But I think his floor spacing ability, at least from what he developed at North Carolina, I think could be something that translates. He was an inconsistent shooter when he was at Stanford. He wasn't as willing to shoot threes when he was at Stanford as well. Like, he shot roughly 32% from deep, 37.3 3-point rate, which means that 37% of his attempts came from beyond the arc. That 3-point rate's upped itself to roughly 45% when he was at UNC. He was kind of that complementary spacer next to Bacot, who isn't much of a floor spacer at all. And he shot roughly 39% from deep. And there is times where I thought throughout the season, you watched him a lot more than I did. I probably only watched maybe a handful of games, 10 games, nothing too crazy. And that's really how it is for the majority of these prospects. He was ignitable at certain times. There were times where he would see one fall and then he would knock down a few more. And to me, I think that his biggest knock was him putting the ball on the floor at times. I think in traffic, he wasn't as his handle was a little loose. And there were times where he would back to the basket, he would show some interior game, but it wasn't a whole lot. And so I think in the pros, that's something where he could become a multi-dimensional scorer. I think that's something that he could improve upon. But I think you nailed it on the head. He was always competitive defensively. He had a nose for the ball, whether it was on the offensive or defensive glass. He was a good floor spacer, especially just a stationary spot up three. I thought he was proficient. Again, whether he's 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", he has those long arms. And it's when you look at the measurements, it's oh, wow. The first Heat name that comes to mind is a Haywood Highsmith, 6'5", with a 7-foot wingspan. That's literally Haywood Highsmith. And a similar-ish skill set. I'm not a big NBA comparisons guy because I just think every player is their own player. But if you're just looking for something to roughly compare it to, it could be a Haywood Highsmith type player, even though I have no idea if he'll be better than Haywood, if he'll be worse than Haywood. You just really don't know until you kind of throw these guys into the fire at the NBA level. But when I was just looking at the measurements, that's kind of the first guy he reminded me of. And he just it looks like he for Ingram's sake, he looks like he just plays bigger than a 6'5", 6'6". He just looks bigger. He plays bigger. And I think he could if you're looking for a 3-and-D guy at 43 or a guy with 3-and-D potential, I think he is one of the guys available, if he's available, that could help impact a team. Maybe not right away, but I think he can impact a team.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with all that. He does, to your point on the block, he just powers through people. It's not like he hits them with anything fancy. It's just brute force. Like you said, 6'5", but when you watch him play, you swear he's like 6'8", 6'9". Yeah. He just has that physicality and that big body. Who's the second person on your list here that stands out to you?
I mean, we're doing that just, again, for the sake of the viewers. We're not doing this in any particular order in terms of want or need. I threw this list together of guys that just intrigued me. This is a guy that I haven't gotten to watch a whole lot of yet, but I did see him at the combine. I have watched clips of him when he was at the Hoop Summit and when he was just playing internationally. Ulrich Shomshe. He was a center at NBA Academy Africa developmental program overseas. He didn't really start playing. Just to give you some measurement, again, this guy did play at the combine. His measurements, 6'10", 7'4", wingspan. I read somewhere, again, don't know how verifiable this is, but he didn't start playing basketball until he was like a teenager, 13 years old. He just turned 18 in December. He'll turn 19 this upcoming December. So he's like a young player. But again, just from what I saw from him at the combine, it was just a really intriguing skill set to me, and like it made me want to dive in more into this guy. He's raw. He's developed a good 3-point shot, it looks like. Like he was willing to shoot it during the combine. I've seen like clips of him when he was at the Hoop Summit. Like he was willing to shoot. His release, it's more fluid than it was, I think, previously. Like it looks like it's more in one motion now. But the thing that really stood out to me was like his athleticism, his shot blocking ability. Like this guy has, I think, good potential to be a weak side rim protector, but also he's shown flashes of like he's mobile in the drop. He's mobile on the perimeter. He has good hip mobility. Like he'll flip his hips with like relatively good speed. And like that's something I think like when you look at it, when you look at NBA players, and I'm not saying this guy is him, but like you look at like Bam Adebayo, he's got good hip mobility, he's got good foot speed, he's got good instincts, he's a good shot blocker when he's around the rim. Like again, Shomshe is a guy who has those traits. He has again some 3-point shooting potential. He a guy who's just really athletic. Like there was a play in the combine, I think it was. May have been the first scrimmage or may have been the second. I can't remember which one, but he was going up against Baylor Shireman, who is another prospect I like. We didn't have him on here. And then Adam Bona, who I do have on here that we'll talk about a little bit later. And there was a rep like really early in their scrimmage where he was in the pick and roll. He was defending Bona, who's another center out of UCLA. He was in drop, and it reminded me of that play that Bam had against the Bulls where he was like he was recovering in drop, Shomshe was, and Shireman threw a lob to Bona, and he had the wherewithal and the instincts to get back in drop, recover, and then block the shot like after Bona caught it. And it was just like, and he was at least a couple steps behind him. And so, or at least a couple steps behind him because Bona goes to the screen, Shomshe recovered and then blocked the lob. It was just like, whoa, like that really stood out to me as like, okay, like this dude, I mean, again, he has the motor, he has the athleticism, he has the physical tools, but like he's got, that's like really good timing. That's really good instincts. Like that's all of that. And so that's, again, like something that was just one singular play that you could probably find somewhere. You could rewatch the scrimmages on YouTube or whatnot. But that was something that really stood out to me because it's like, you don't see that really at all. Guy get beat and drop because the guy he's defending goes to screen and then you recover and block a shot. And so like again, that's just to give you an idea of like what kind of player he is. He has a good motor. He didn't really score a lot during the combine. He showed the athletic traits, he showed the defensive instincts that really impressed me. There was a nasty pass that he had in the Hoop Summit where he caught it above the break and threw just a complete disgustingly good backdoor pass to someone. So like he may have like the passing chops that you want. Again, 18 years old, raw prospect, but a guy that at least stands out to me as a guy, if he falls to the second round, I don't know if he will, but if he falls to 43, especially if you take a guard or a wing in the first round, he's a guy, like, if you look at the value proposition of, like, okay, who are the centers available in the first round? You don't take a center, or at least because he's going to be a backup center behind Bam. You go with a guard or a wing. This guy isn't far off from some of those centers at the top, like Misi, who I like a lot. Like, I'm not even going to say it. Like, Deron Holmes is probably closer to Shomshay, but like Khalil Ware, like, I don't think Shomshay is that far off. And so he could be a guy, if you want to go guard or wing in the first round, he's a guy that you can get in the second potentially.
Yeah, so it sounds like he's a more of a project. So athleticism, yeah. The Heat need athleticism. It's always good if you're going to draft a guy that's really young, that's raw, that's just athletic and has a lot of tools there that you can see, like the movement and everything. And it sounds like what you're saying is he's willingness to pretty much do everything on the basketball court, and he's just real raw. So you could really mold him in the type of player you would like. So you mentioned this player, so we'll go to him. Bona, the center out of UCLA. We have here, you started seeing him on Heat Twitter.
Yeah.
Kind of turned you on to him. So,
well, I mean, I knew who he was, but I can't remember. It was like middle of the season where I think a lot of Heat, like Twitter, like found, I mean, again, you and I are on Heat Twitter. We see, like, he's then there was started being a lot of buzz about, like, him, like, ooh, like, look at this guy. When we're first diving into this class, and like, I knew of him, I've watched a little bit of him prior to this point. But like, when you, I mean, again, highlights are highlights, but you got to do something to get those highlights, right? And so, like, he's a little bit of an undersized center, 6'8" with a 7-foot-1 wingspan, 9-foot standing reach, which is above average for a guy who's roughly 6'8". He's athletic as hell. Like, he moves like he's 6'5". He can handle the ball a little bit. He didn't really showcase much of a shot. Like, majority of his attempts came around the rim when he was at UCLA, but like, he was a vertical lob threat. He's got a really good motor. And I think that's going to be a similar theme to these guys that I'll share. Cause it's just like something that pops out to me when I watch these guys is like their motor and like how much do you want it? And like he has excellent mobility as like a rolling threat, as a guy defensively in space, as a guy just on the perimeter when he's like running up the court. Like, he runs the floor really well. He's very switchable defensively. He's a guy that you can just throw up like a lob up to, and he'll slam it and he'll finish it. And like, even when he is creating like self creation, he has, I think, a pretty good handle. And like, he has not like a huge array of moves, but a good enough array, good enough bag, so to speak, that he can get to the rim. And like, whether it's like a spin move, Euro steps, whatever the case is, like, I think he showcases that skill set. And again, if he's a guy, like, again, if you go guard or wing in the first round, which I think the Heat will do, just a gut instinct, then he's a guy that isn't super far off from a value standpoint relative to some of the top centers in the class. And so I think he's a guy that just like pops off the page figuratively and literally just because of his athleticism. And I think he's more polished than Shomshay is, but he doesn't have the shot that Shomshay does, but he can still do a lot of things on the basketball court that you like. And I think, and with the Sky, again, we're talking about this in relation to what the Sky Force could potentially want or potentially need to develop. Again, the goal is to develop these guys. He could potentially develop into like a two-level score from the mid-range. He could potentially help out, like, again, since they lost Malik Williams, they lost some of these guys. Like, he could potentially develop into like one of their next, like, I guess, quote center projects, whatever you want to say. And how about three UCLA guys on the Heat? Hawkes, Kevin Love, and Adam Bona. And he was really like the biggest bright spot from them this year. UCLA had a pretty disappointing season. But just watching him on the floor was one of the biggest bright spots, I think, that they had. And so he's a guy that I would look at 43 if he was available.
Yeah, and to that about being the bright spot, first team all Pac-12, Pac-12 defensive player of the year. A lot of tools there, and he He showed what he can do on the court on the defensive end. If we know anything about the Miami Heat, they love that defensive end. So it sounds from all what I'm hearing, that would be a guy I would really keep my eye on if I was a Heat fan or a Skyforce fan looking for the next, like you said, kind of project to come in. So now we're going to pivot.
Oh, 6 foot. I just forgot to mention this. 6'8", but I think had one of the highest, if not the highest standing verts at the combine, 35-inch standing vert, which is like really, really, really good for a guy of his size. And a 40-inch max vert, which is among the top. It's not the, I think that the highest was 42, just throughout everyone. But again, when you're getting like a guy who's 6'9", who's has those type of measurables, again, that's 6'8", 6'9", 7'4" wingspan. Like, again, just that in and of itself is intriguing to me. But
yeah, so he's athletic too. So
he's athletic as hell.
He could very be athletic. You know, I was just about to say he could be like a poor man's Bam. And if you could if you could replace Bam with a poor man's Bam, man, that would be amazing. That's the first thing that popped into my mind.
Not replace Bam. We're not trying to replace.
Well,
Bam.
No, I'm saying in rotation, like when Bam, you know, can't play every minute of every game. His coach is not Tibbs, so he does rest some. So whenever he comes out, you know, potentially, you know, you could have Bonus sliding in there.
Hey, it's Ethan Skolnick for Five on the Floor on the Five Reasons Sports Network. As you know, we heard from Pat Riley recently. Everybody has an opinion on trades, free agency, who they should keep, who they should give up, who they should get. Well, whatever it is that Riley and the Heat do, you don't want them giving up too much and getting too little, right? Well, the same is true of shaving products, and that's why I use Harry's shaving products. I love the weight it handles. I love the way it looks, and I love the quality of the shave. I have a little bit of trouble growing out a good beard, so better to just shave it off and make sure that it looks somewhat professional. These are German-engineered blades made in their own factory, so they stay sharp longer. Means you can use them longer. And also, they've got customizable delivery options for scheduled refills as low as $2, half of what you pay for other big brands. Also, I would recommend the shaving lotion as well and the body wash. So check it out. You can go to harrys.com/5. That's harrys.com/5. You'll get a $13 trial set for just $3. Again, don't pay too much and get too little. Same is true of shaving as NBA transactions. harrys.com/5 for your $3 trial set.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
So now we're going to pivot to Jalen Bridges, forward from Baylor. You said you could see him becoming a 3-and-D wing at the next level, just all-around good player. What do you think are some of his weaknesses, though?
I would say, like, his in-between game, and I think consistently creating off the bounce in the half court. Like, he was a guy who was really impressive in transition, but I don't think – just I didn't see it enough. From, and I guess if we're labeling it a weakness, I didn't see it enough from him just off the dribble. I think he can absolutely do it. But he was a guy, and like also I want to see him. I mean, I want to see him become like a multi-level threat at the next level. But again, I think his ceiling is more of like a 3-and-D guy who can just immediately impact right away. Lightning quick release. His footwork was a lot better, I think. That I in the like in the combine and like the shooting drills that I saw and stuff then in college, like it felt like at times in college where he would shoot it and he would kick his feet out, like not forward but like outward when he would shoot, and like I don't know how much of that affects your shot, but it just looked funky to me. But mm-hmm. I think from like he looked a lot more balanced when he was, I mean, I think he looked more balanced as the year went on, but more balanced at the combine. But I think a guy like just his in-between game, him creating off the dribble a little bit, I think that's something that he can develop. He showed passing chops. He's a good defender, or at least he's shown that to me when I've watched him in a limited sample. And so that's not something I'm crazy concerned about. But I think just his creation ability, his self-creation ability is something that I'm interested to see if he can develop over time.
Yeah, and to your point about the 3-and-D, he nailed 41.2% of his three-point shots last year on 5.1 attempts. It's pretty good.
He'll need to show consistency with that, because he was like a sub 35% shooter his previous two seasons after being like a 40% guy again on low volume when he was at West Virginia. So like there's an inconsistency there that you want to see ironed out over time, but I think he's improved as a shooter, and I think that'll sustain itself. I project him to be like a mid to high 30s three-point shooter at the next level.
That reminds me of two players, Jaime Jaquez. If you look at his college stats year by year, he was either a really good shooter or sub 30. And then Harrison Ingram, the one we talked about before, kind of started out, you know, his career not a great three-point shooter, kind of inconsistent, and then exploded in his last year. So you have to figure out, is that more so what he's going to be, or is he going to be kind of what he showed in previous years? That's why the Heat scouts are paid a bunch of money. That's their job to figure out. You just like what you've seen from him in this past year. Now, this is one of my favorite players in college basketball, and I would love him on the Heat because I think he's a Heat mold player. Jamal Shedd, guard out of Houston, defensive player of the year. This guy is an animal on the defensive end. Houston was probably the best team to challenge UConn until he went out, because that defense was just dominant, and he was the reason for that. So he did get hurt, I think like 6 minutes left in the first half against Duke, and they wound up losing that game. But if you watch before he got hurt, Duke couldn't do anything, and it was all because of him. So he is that Heat mold type guy that I think he could play right away. What do you think about him, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, when you turn on the tape for Jamal Shedd, like, I'll preface by saying, if you want functional size in the backcourt, he's not the biggest guy in the world. He's around 6 foot with like a 6'3", 6'4 wingspan, so it's not crazy, but he is a legit dog. Like, a legit dog. And I say that in the most complimentary way possible. Consensus All-American. The thing that I want to see him improve over time, and I don't know if it'll translate to the NBA level, is just like his efficiency. He finished the season shooting 77.9% from the free throw line, which suggests some positive regression from his three-point shot, which was around 31%, 41% inside the arc, or 41% field goal percentage, roughly 46, 47% inside the arc. And it's just hard to do that when you're that small, like from a height perspective, but he plays defense like he's 6'5 with a 6'10 wingspan. Like, he is up in your jersey. He is not going to give you any space. He's going to make you uncomfortable. And the thing that I've hammered this home before on, like, in previous spaces, I talked about this when Jaime Jaquez was drafted. And I've referenced, like, Caleb Martin in the past. Like, they were all well-coached in college. And I think that he, like when I say well coached, I mean like they were coached, obviously, like they're good coaches. Kelvin Sampson's one of the best coaches in America. Mick Cronin, who was Jaime Jaquez's coach at UCLA, a really good coach. Eric Musselman, people who know me know how I feel about Eric Musselman. That's my guy. He really coached Caleb Martin really well when he was in college. But like, Kelvin Sampson's one of the best coaches in America, but like they coached him hard. Kelvin Sampson is going to coach you hard. And I think the Heat look at that, and I think the Heat like that, because Eric Spoelstra will coach. I mean, I'm not in the building, but he's going to coach guys hard. And like Jamal Shedd, over his, what, 4 or 5 years at Houston, developed into a leader. he developed into a like a point guard, a guy like who, like a floor general. I think he improved his decision making over time. I think he improved his court awareness over time. He's a guy that will go sometimes at 110 miles an hour, but in like again in the best way possible. And I think he's just he's one of my favorite players just because of like his mentality and like what he brings on a basketball court. I think he just plays bigger than his size. And again, I know we will probably catch flack from Heat fans for mentioning a guy who's 6 foot. Because like, again, the Heat have gone through these Briante Weber, Gabe Vincent kind of molds. And Jamal Shedd kind of fits that from a defensive perspective.
Yeah. We could, summarize Jamal Shedd with one word, culture. Culture. He's a Heat culture player. I love that man. And I'm a sucker for, you know, point of attack defense. We've said numerous times we need some point of attack defense, especially on the Skyforce. Man, that guy would just be like A-plus elite right off the jump. So that's exactly what I would like. So if we don't get Harrison Ingram, like I said, Harrison Ingram's my dream. I'm a little biased as I'm wearing my North Carolina hoodie. Jamal Shedd, I would be jumping for joy. So I love that. So now we're going to pivot to a guy that maybe not everyone would know, but he was a combine standout, Trenton Flowers out of Australia. What did you think about him during the combine?
The thing that pops off to me most with Trenton Flowers is his athleticism. He had a 42 max for, and but then you just watch him in the scrimmages and like he has such an explosive first step. And he can get to the rim and finish above the rim with the best of them. And like him being 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", like he has good size to him, but he just explodes off the screen. And just a full disclaimer for him, I didn't really watch much of him previously. Like I didn't really have a great feel for who he was, but then I watched like the scrimmages. And again, it's a small sample. It's a one game thing. But you're doing this against other NBA prospects and some of the guys that you've never played with before. And his fluidity, his movements, he was competing his you know what off on the defensive end of the floor. Like it just all of that stood out to me. I think he showed to have like a fairly good shot. And so just like his movements, I think stood out to me the most. And he's the guy that I want to watch more of over the next several weeks leading up to June 26. Because, like, when you look at mocks and stuff, or at least mocks previously, like, he's not really there. And so, like, he just popped off the page for me. And it's just like, whoa, like, if you get this guy, if you can mold this guy into, like, an all-around player or a guy who can provide a role for you, you're in a really good spot just because of his athleticism, just because of his physical tools that he has. And I think the Skyforce could be a team that does that.
Yeah. And, you know, talking about his athleticism, his combine high 42 inch max vert, you know, that's something that translates. Jumping translates. And that can help in a lot of aspects of the game, getting your shot off, rebounding, and overall, just that shows how athletic you are in those quick twitch muscles that you have that can project how you can use your body to get an advantage in the NBA or in the G League. Because all these guys are amazing players, right? They know how to play basketball. They know how to score. They know how to do all of that. But you have to distinguish, you know, who has those traits that can continue that once they start playing with other elite athletes. That's why sometimes you say, someone's a college player versus an NBA player, right? College, if you're a real smart player, you can make up for lack of athleticism a lot easier than the NBA. And so he has a lot of athleticism. Like you said, he jumped out to you in the combine with how he used that athleticism. So I think that's a really actually a good thing to look for. And he's playing against those other guys that are elite at what they do at the combine. That's why they have it. The teams invite these players to come. So that lets you know the teams have him on their radar. So quickly, I want to hit one more player, though. KJ Simpson out of Colorado. A lot of people are talking about him. I want to hit this one quickly, not spend too much time, because I mean, I don't think really many people expect him to be at 43. So this would be kind of the one exception of the Heat might trade up in the second round or find a way to get him, right? And or he falls unexpectedly. So what are your quick thoughts on KJ Simpson?
He was a guy – this is something about the combine that goes underrated, and I think I may have brushed over this previously. You're playing with guys that you never played with really in your life unless if you play with them at, like, when you were, like, AAU teammates or whatever by some chance. Or if you just went to the same college and they somehow put you on the same team for the combine scrimmages. He controlled practically every aspect of the game when he was on the floor during those two scrimmages. And I think that stands out because it's like it shows how much of a, like, again, maybe just like an on-court leader. It shows your IQ, your feel for the game, because I mean he made good decisions throughout the combine. He was aggressive. He showcased his shot a little bit. He was a really good shooter last year, shot 43% from deep on good volume. Something that he didn't do over his previous 2 years at Colorado, which something that he'll need to be more consistent at just from a year-to-year basis at the NBA level. Even though he was a good free throw shooter. So, like, again, there's some positive regression from that. But he could just control every single aspect. And he, like, again, consistently make good decisions. He was competing on the defensive heavy, even though he's 6 foot with the 6'4 wingspan. Like, again, he's another guy who's just not the biggest guy on the court. So I think how you're able to control what's going on around you when most of these guys, again, they're not really familiar with how you play on the court. Like you're just throwing these guys together on an NBA court and hoping something good happens. And like, obviously I'm guessing, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm guessing there's probably like a practice or two with these guys on these teams. Again, I have no idea. But like most of the, you just haven't had much experience with any of these guys, if any. And so the fact that he was able to control the floor the way he did, he averaged 26 and 5 for being 6 foot. And I think that's incredibly impressive on near 50, 40, 90 shooting splits. Roughly 50% from the floor, 43 from deep, 88 from the free throw line. And he played on a team with two other potential first round picks in Cody Williams and Tristan Da Silva, who I like a lot. And so like the fact that you're able to put up those numbers, you were able to help lead Colorado to an NCAA tournament bid. And like, again, you're just that floor general, that point guard, a guy who knows when to toggle between attacking, that guy who can toggle between playmaking, good decision-making, really good release, really good shooter, despite being that small. I think that's something that stands out to me. And so just a lot of good qualities. Again, he's a bulldog, I think, on the defensive end of the floor, even though he is that size. I think that matters. And again, I don't think he's going to be there at 43. I'm completely with you. I don't think a few of these guys will be there at 43, but these are guys that I like. And hopefully if you're a team who's not Miami listening to this, just think everything's the opposite of what I'm saying, so you don't pick these guys. So they can fall to 43. But yeah, he was another player that I liked during the combine a lot. You think one of my biggest winners of that two-game stretch. He was a guy that I liked a lot late in the season at Colorado. He's just a really good player, really smart player, in my opinion.
Yeah,
really competitive player.
People are talking about him a lot. I've seen him all over Twitter. And like you said, you really like his teammate Tristan Da Silva, and you know, the Heat, we've been told, like him too. He's one of the guys that we've been told to look out for. So if they're watching him, they have to be watching KJ as well, because they're watching the game, right? So they might have seen something that they like in the second round for him, and then combine that with the draft combine, they would maybe be enticed to trade up to get him. Because like I said, I don't think he's going to be available at 43. Very rarely a guy that shows all these skills and averages what he does, especially as a complimentary piece to other players. They rarely last that long, especially in the second round in the modern NBA with shooting. So I'd be interested to see what happens. I would bet the Heat have taken notice of him, considering they've watched a lot of his teammate. I feel like it'd be kind of hard not to. So with that, though, are there any, give me three or four or so, just quick, just names of guys that our listeners can go out and look for if they want to hear more about, you know, prospects that the Skyforce and Heat might be getting.
Zach Eady. No. no, I'm playing. I'm playing. AJ Johnson was one that I liked during the combine. He was like, he played with Bronny. He was a guy who played kind of like a combo guard role that I liked. Jonathan Mogbo, who was a forward from San Francisco. He played at four colleges in 4 years. He's a guy who 6'6", 7'2", 7'3", wingspan. But he looks so much bigger than 6'6". When I watch him on the floor, he plays above the rim. He can initiate offense. I think he's another guy who's really mobile defensively. Nikola Jurišić, I don't know. I apologize if I mispronounce your last name. He was another like combine standout to me that I want to watch more of over these next several weeks. Just a guy who had really good feel for the game. His playmaking, his shot creation was something that I really liked. He was competitive on the defensive end of the floor. If there's any others, like Jackson Robinson from BYU, the sixth man of the year, Cam Spencer, a guy from UConn who I think would just love Spo because of just he and Dan Hurley were like best friends because of how psychopathic both of them are from a competitive standpoint. So I think that's fun. Enrique Freeman, forward from Akron, Trevon Brazil, forward from Arkansas. I'm trying to think if there's like any others that come to mind. Trey Alexander, guard from Creighton, PJ Hall, if you like the guy. Again, I mean, he's a little inconsistent shooter, but forward from Clemson that impressed me down the stretch of the season. Keyshawn Johnson, the guy who I watched a lot of when he was at San Diego State. He transferred to Arizona. He's like this big wing who's pretty athletic. So those are just a bunch of names that come to mind. Again, he may not look at any of these guys. Like AJ Mitchell, guard from UC Santa Barbara, who I liked during the combine. Alex Caravan, kind of this tweener guard forward from UConn. Baylor Shireman was a guy who I referenced beforehand. I don't think he'll be there. I think he'll probably be a late first rounder, but he's just a guy, like if he falls to 43 with his all-around skill set, with his rebounding ability, with his shot-making ability, a guy who I would like. Oso Ighodaro, forward from Marquette. I know I just threw a lot of names at you. But again, just guys that I like, guys that stood out. The Heat could laugh in my face with all of these guys. I don't know. They could look for Zach Eady.
If Zach Eady is available in the second round, I might actually take him then.
I would too. also, I want to get your thoughts on the single player that you mentioned to me before we hopped on. And we've talked about this off air plenty of times before. Bronny James. You're more of a Bronny James guy than I am. Let the people know what your thoughts are on Bronny James.
My thoughts on Bronny James. Yeah, it was like, one, LeBron's kid doesn't mean much, right? Like in the NBA, no one cares about that. But it does mean something. You know, he's got good genes. And I think he's more athletic than people realize. He's got a good shooting stroke. I mean, people look at his college stats, but like, you don't understand. He almost died on the court. It's like kind of a miracle he was playing. So you kind of more so have to look at his highs than his lows, because he didn't get to prepare for his first college and only college season. I think you put him in an environment that focuses on development and doesn't care who you are. I mean, they didn't care who LeBron was. They're not going to care who his kid is. Like, they're going to work you hard and maximize your skill set. I think that's what Bronny needs. I think he does have some skills that can translate. I mean, he was a really, really good shooter in high school. I know that doesn't always translate. And a lot of NBA players that can't shoot were really good shooters in high school because it's closer. But that was like his thing. Like, he was a shooter. And he was an elite prospect too. We're not talking about like he only got an offer to USC because he is LeBron's kid. No, memory serves me correctly, he was like a four-star fringe, five-star, depending on where you were looking at. He has talent. He's going to be hyper criticized though. So I could see that making teams not want him. But towards the end of the second round, like 43 on around there, I mean, you're taking a shot at the dark with a lot of these guys, and you're more so on tools than production for a lot of them. I mean, why not take a shot with a guy that's the son of the greatest basketball player of all time? So that's part of my thoughts of like, you know, he understands how to work, how to improve, and he has tools that he's shown you there. That's all you need. You need tools and then love environments that want you to improve. And we know he has both of those. So I'm willing to trust the Heat development and Skyforce development to develop him into a good NBA player. But maybe I'm a LeBron guy, so maybe that's just my bias of really wanting him to do good, to silence all the haters. But I will say that would be great for the Skyforce. Dan Peters would love calling those games with a packed out arena. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, we would. Again, you and I have talked about this off air. How it would help us.
Selfishly, it would help us.
Selfishly, it would help us.
That's not the reason, though.
Let's make that clear. That's not the reason. I think I'm with you there. Like, again, I'm not high on him as a prospect. I've gone on record saying that I think he should return to college. But
that I do agree with that.
That's my opinion. He's going to do what's best for him, and his family, and his career. And I hope whatever he decides to do. Again, for full disclosure, recording this on May 24th, he's in the transfer portal right now. He has until May 29th to retain college eligibility. I think at this point, he's just going to keep his name in. But again, there's still 5 days to decide that. Plenty of players. I mean, heck, there could be players that we just talked about that are going to be returning back to school. And so all of this is going to be, and so like that's more than a possibility, just in general for this podcast. But, all of these guys that we talked about, at least to my knowledge, are still in the NBA draft, or at least their name is still in. I do think like Bronny does need a developmental system. And I think I'm completely with you. Like, if you were going to take a shot at someone with a high potential who has a raw skill set, he would be one of those guys. Like, he could definitely be a guy if he's not taken beforehand. Cause I think just for the best of him, that he needs that developmental program, that developmental system. And like, if the Heat do take him, this is kind of where I'm at with just Heat draft picks, whether I like the pick, dislike the pick, or whatever. I trust that they have a plan, because they've shown over and over again with these picks that, like, yeah, you're not going to bat 1,000 on these picks, but my take for teams and drafts is like the best organizations will find talent, they'll nurture talent, they'll develop talent more often than not. And so I trust the Heat, if they do draft Bronny at 43, they'll have a plan, there's going to be guys who I like more than him at 43, if he's there at 43. But I trust they have a plan. Again, kind of to your point, you're throwing darts and you're just hoping it sticks. You're hoping you get a bullseye with that. And so actually, I don't really know how darts work. I've seen like different videos. I'm not even going to go into that. But anyway, you're throwing darts and you're hoping you don't like hit a window. And so that's practically what I'm saying. And so like, if you take a chance on Bronny, if you're able to develop his skill set, his shooting ability, his playmaking ability, he's got the defensive tools, in my opinion. It's hard because, again, to your point, he didn't have a full season or didn't have a full off season, or he didn't have a full season, but he didn't have a full off season either. And so like, if you were to maintain his college eligibility, this would be his first full off season. To develop, to train, to build up his skill set, to get more reps in, just as like a primary shot creator, secondary shot creator, whatever he needs. He was a guy who impressed during the combine, the second scrimmage. He was a guy who was a lot more aggressive, a lot more comfortable with the ball in his hands. Potentially that's good for his NBA prospects if he's able to find a system to where he's able to get those touches, get those reps in. and go over any necessary hurdles that he needs to before he becomes an NBA player at some point down the line, if that's in the cards for him. And so I'm with you there, even though, again, I'm not as high on him as a prospect as some is, as some are. And again, that's just why we do this. That's why we do this. I'm a dumb idiot. So it's okay. I'm wrong, but I've been wrong before. I'll be wrong again.
Yeah. I mean, like, if it was so obvious to, you know, choose the next great superstar, or the next hidden gem, like I like to use for the Skyforce and the Heat with their undrafted or second round type players, there wouldn't be a draft, right? Like, it would remove all the excitement. You would know who's going one, you know who's going two, and so on and so forth. Because you're like, oh, this one's going to be better than this. This one's going to be better than this. Like you said, you're just trying not to hit a window. So you're trying to get a guy that sticks around and can contribute in some way. And so we're going to wrap up there. I know it's a longer episode for our listeners here, but we really appreciate you listening. And hopefully you learned something about one of these people. Like Matt said, they're all going to be first team All-NBA at some point in their careers. So with come back to this and be like,
they go to the Skyforce.
Yeah, first team all G League for sure. And then a first team all NBA down the line. So come back to this in a couple years and we'll tell you we told you so. So with that, let's go Skyforce.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.